Bernie campaign and the Trump election, I was radicalized. And then within joining DSA, I've become further radicalized and come to an understanding that engaging in electoral work is not enough to bring about socialism.
Notes from the Left Forum 2018. The conference was held in New York City in June at John Jay College, the theme towards a new strategy for the left. In this program, what is DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America? That's the topic examined at a panel at the Left Forum. One of the speakers, longtime progressive activist Jim Cregan, notes that the DSA is the principal beneficiary of the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign. Membership swelled in the DSA from about 6,000 to 30,000, with about 300 chapters now throughout the country. 80% of its 24,000 new members are under the age of 35. The organization is 90% white and 75% male. He says its youthful new members are showing distinct signs of leftward momentum. We'll hear from Cregan, but begin with one of these new members. From a wealthy Westchester family, Jack Devine says if we want to change the world, we have to recognize our own complicity in reinforcing the hierarchies which emerge from tyranny, largely imposed by an oligarchy of imperialistic white men. DSA member Jack Devine.
The collective faith and the illusion of a free society that holds together the contradictory liberal political values with an authoritarian economic structure is vanishing before our very eyes. This is what led to my own political development. I am not the background of someone you would expect to engage in socialism. I grew up in Westchester in a wealthy family that worked in finance. But I was raised on these broad liberal egalitarian concepts. But the reality of the world shattered that one by one with the Iraq War, the financial crash, the disappointment with Obama, and then through the Bernie campaign and the Trump election, I was radicalized. And then within joining DSA, I've become further radicalized and come to an understanding that engaging in electoral work is not enough to bring about socialism. There have been a number of broad left developments since the financial crash that I think have both led to a transformation in the left and specifically DSA. Prior to Occupy, DSA was a small organization that was mostly composed of leftovers from the new left in the 1960s. Occupy brought in a new energy to DSA that led to the ultimate transformation that came after the 2016 Bernie campaign. Amidst this transformation, there's also been a growing unionization within young people in particular, in media, graduate students. Like, for example, even though it's at an elite Ivy League institution, the 5,000 Harvard faculty that recently organized and were guaranteed a contract. Even in fields like transportation, there has been a recent upsurge, such as the 5,000 JetBlue workers that recently joined a union earlier this year, as well as a victory in South Carolina, the most virulently anti-union state in the country, in which approximately 250 workers this past week decided to unionize. Alongside this, there has been an emergence of strikes across the country. Most well-known are the teacher and other educational workers, starting in Chicago in 2012, and then this year spreading to West Virginia, Jersey City, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Arizona, Colorado, as well as threats in Pittsburgh and LA, not among the teachers, but among the other public education workers that forced the hand of the state. Alongside this, graduate students at Columbia, the University of Illinois, and the New School have gone on strike. And in the New School, this also contained solidarity with the cafeteria workers who, with the students, have occupied the cafeteria, demanding a worker cooperative in its place. This has also coincided with the growth of explicitly socialist media, as in Jacobin. What I've been doing personally in DSA is working in political education. I was part of the Central Brooklyn Branch Working Group that recently put together a night school that met over 8 sessions and discussed both the classical texts such as Marx, but also dived into more recent phenomenon through like the lens of academic scholars like David Harvey. At the same time, I've been a rank and file member of electoral campaigns such as Jabari Brisport's effort, which was the most successful third-party effort in a New York City Council election in at least a decade. What's also happening in political education is we're developing the second round of night schools, as well as starting to begin a internal debate forum.
1 minute.
So where is DSA going? I think this is an impossible question to answer. I reject the premise, though, that it's like going nowhere. I think there are endless possibilities. I think there's too much of a focus on the left, as there has been for a long time, on specific questions of whether we should support the Democratic Party, align with social democrats, work with union bureaucrats. I think the real question here is organizational structure. The DSA, the structure of the DSA, the democratic structure of it, and it's not simply a democratic structure, but it's also a structure that gives autonomy to working groups. There are elements in the DSA, yet they're, I think to use interest groups I think that's not the proper summation of the makeup of DSA. A lot of people came into it without any prior activist organization, while other activists came in, yes, with a background. I think there's a lot of nuance in the manner in which DSA is organized and is moving further to the left. And I think also there's this notion that the Democratic Party is this like conspiratorial force that is directing people in this way or the other, while yes, the DSA has run candidates on the Democratic Party line with no assistance from the internal organizations within the Democratic Party. I think that is really important to note, but also has run candidates outside of the Democratic Party. Forming a party organization other than the Democrats be a superior alternative? Yes, that's likely, but how is that going to happen? We have to meet people where they are. And if you say that, oh, I'm developing this third party, well, within the context of U.S. electoral system, that is not really possible. The last time there was a real third party surge was prior to the Civil War, when there was an expansion into the Midwest. Like, we have to analyze the historical context that we're in. So, and at the same time, the notion...
You've got 5 more seconds.
Oh, I got 5.
If you want them.
Also, the fact is, parties themselves are bourgeois institutions that are always going to compromise the needs of the state. The Communist Party in China is now probably the number one financier of global capitalism. So I don't think just formulating third parties is the solution. There has to be a counter-hegemonic strategy that builds alternative institutions, not just in electoral politics, but throughout the entire political economy.
DSA member Jack Devine. And you're listening to Notes from the Left Forum 2018, a panel looking at the question of what is the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America. Next up, an undergraduate student who came to the forum in New York City from studying at the University of Chicago. Erin Higard has been examining the goals, strategies, and tactics of the DSA. Erin Higard.
Both the Democrats and the Republicans in the wake of 2008 have a need to capture the middle class discontents with the 2008 crisis that were expressed through lots of things. Occupy is a big one, but also Black Lives Matter, the anti-war movement, you know, the list goes on and on. So when we talk about the tactics of the DSA, this is like where things seem to get messy, right? Because, well, like the first time I ever went to a YDSA meeting, what happened is pretty much what happens in any activist meeting, actually, is you sit down and somebody says, okay, what are the different sort of activities that we want to do? What do we want to support? What are our causes? You go around the room and everybody says their causes, and you get like the usual suspects, climate change, anti-racism, you know, the list goes on and on. And then, you know, they're like, well, okay, we should do all of these things, but we can't do all of them, right? And so some get chosen and some don't. And I think this, you know, is very apparent in a lot of kind of the fights that happen within the DSA. So for example, will DSA support Israel or will they support BDS, right? That was kind of a big question within the DSA, and some people were really excited when they said that they would support BDS. At the same time, you had, like, for example, the recent East Bay DSA election, where the same people who, you know, were happy that DSA supported BDS thought that they elected really, like, conservative DSA members. So there's a question when it comes to Jacobin and when it comes to DSA, the DSA, of why is it that every leftist group thinks they can project their interests into the DSA? Because everybody can, right? We can look at Jacobin and we can say that they publish lots of, like, left progressive things. or we can look at different parts of the DSA and say, well, they're doing this or that policy that I like, right? And I would argue that all of these are essentially different middle-class discontents with capitalism that are being organized by the DSA, and that this is a necessary process, as in for the Democratic Party to organize the middle-class discontents with capitalism, to capture the progressive imagination, you need an organization that is able to kind of deal with all of these different discontents and to be kind of the place where they can be heard and the place where they can either be worked on or thrown in the trash, right? Where you can kind of pick and choose where the different interests can fight with each other. For example, the BLM kind of social democrat divide within the DSA, I think, is a really big example of this. And so when it comes to the democracy of the DSA, this is precisely the problem, is that they're the Bonapartists of the left. As in, any leftist organization can say, yes, this is the group where I can go after my interests. And maybe that's true. Maybe you can be an interest group in the DSA. The same way that, for example, many of my fellow students joined the DSA to, and I'm quoting a student here, participate in the Democratic Party realignment. Because it's easier to join the DSA to help support Bernie against Hillary than it is to, like, become a big Whig in an NGO. It's an easier way to support the Democrats. So when it comes to, you know, the question of its growth and of socialism, this can be an opportunity for education, but it can also be an opportunity for miseducation.
University of Chicago student Erin Higard. And you're listening to Notes from the Left Forum on Pacifica Radio, WBAI, New York. The panel called What is DSA? Looking at whether this is a moment to advance the struggle for socialism, and if so, what does this mean? And does it represent a transformation of the DSA itself? These are some of the questions addressed by Jim Cregan, a Workers' World contributor and longtime activist and scholar. In the 60s, Cregan was chair of the Penn State chapter of SDS, Students for a Democratic Society. He lectured in philosophy in the 70s, belonged to the Spartacist League in the 80s, and was a leading member of the International Bolshevik Tendency and a union shop steward during the late 80s and 90s. Cregan says he comes to the topic not as a DSA member or as a member of any organization, but as an observer. He begins by looking at what the old DSA was, and then he moves on to speak about Jacobin magazine. Jim Cregan.
Pre-Socratic philosophy was dominated by two figures with diametrically opposed principles. Parmenides, on the one hand, posited a static, unchanging one. His opposite number, Heraclitus, posited a universe that was in eternal flux and to which no definitions could be fixed. Now, until 2016 and 17, the U.S. far left, at least that part of it in New York, which I was active in, bore much more of a resemblance to the Parmenidean universe in point of stasis, if not in unity. You're not in the wrong panel. I'm an old philosophy student. I can't resist these. All of the territory on the far left was very clearly demarcated. No one in one bailiwick was particularly interested in hearing what people in other bailiwicks had to say. They had heard it all before. And this equation changed quite dramatically as a result of the influx of 24,000 new members into Democratic Socialists of America, as a result of the Bernie Sanders campaign, for the most part. So, to ask where the DSA is going, and if I don't have time to complete this in my allotted 10 minutes, I hope to do so in the discussion. To find out where that's going, we have to interrogate a little bit about what the old DSA was. So it was founded in 1982 from a merger between DSOC and, that is, the Democratic Socialist Organizing Committee and the New American Movement. DSOC was dominated by Michael Harrington, and the New American Movement, in which I participated before the merger, was a rightward moving, I would say, remnants of the 1960s New Left. And it was inseparable, and the whole political identity of DSA is inseparable from the political career of Michael Harrington, who has achieved in social democratic circles and further a kind of saintly status. His picture still adorns the DSA website. So, what was Harrington? And what was and what were his politics prior to the merger? He was, after a brief sojourn on the revolutionary left, became a leading member of the Socialist Party. He was the author of The Other America, an expose of U.S. poverty, a member of the Kennedy Poverty Commission, and he was, in left-wing politics, a member of the Socialist Party of Norman Thomas, and within that party, his tutor and mentor was someone whom some of you may have heard of called Max Shachtman. Shachtman was moving right at this time. The Socialist Party was completely on board with the Cold War anti-communist crusade. In fact, its head, Norman Thomas, took money directly from the CIA. So it was in this capacity that Harrington was involved in the most famous episode of his early career, which was locking out Students for a Democratic Society, which was then under the tutelage of the LED, LID, the League for Industrial Democracy, under the which was the educational arm of the Socialist Party. The SDS's Port Huron statement had raised objections, had made some criticisms of Cold War anti-communism. Worse still, it had admitted a member of the Communist Youth Group, but to its convention. And as a result of that, Harrington called the leaders of SDS for an inquisition before the board. He cut off their pay. He locked them out. They had crossed the line in violating the anti-communist credo of the Socialist Party. And the next major episode in Harrington's career was his involvement in the Vietnam War. He refused to call for the complete withdrawal of the U.S. forces from Vietnam until the pitifully late date of 1970. I needn't tell you everything that went on before then. But during the Vietnam War, prior to that, he was actively involved in red baiting the anti-war movement. His peace organization, which was called Negotiations Now, was a front for basically a front for Max Shachtman, who secretly favored the victory of U.S. forces in Vietnam. So it was, according to his biographer, nothing more than a platform from which to red bait the other organizers of the anti-war movement. So that was the 60s and early 70s. But by the 1980s, politics had changed, and the animosities of that period had somewhat cooled down, and the grip of anti-communism had lost its hold on a lot of the population, and even the left. So this is the time when the merger took place, and between NAM, the New American Movement, and DSOC, resulting in the creation of the DSA. But I would submit, and Harrington said at the time, that the merger took place essentially on his terms. Yes, it dropped some of them. He apologized for locking out SDS, etc., etc., and for some of his more obnoxious Cold War interventions. But the two essential things, his project of realigning the Democratic Party into a progressive social democratic force, and his support for trade union, progressive trade union bureaucrats, remains. Some of the three trade union bureaucrats that he did support, that he touted, were three who were probably bore the most responsibility for the historic defeat of the labor movement in the late 70s and early 80s, Victor Gottbaum, William Wimpersinger, and Douglas Frazier. We can go into that more later. Now, that was the DSA prior to the influx of members in 2016-17.
2 minutes.
Okay. And now we can say that the DSA has changed in a lot of ways. They show adherence to leftward. They show a lot of leftward motion. They have voted to leave the Second International, but they have adhered to the BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement. And therefore, there is an evidence that this is an organization more in Heraclitean flux than in Parmenidean stasis. So we can't say exactly where it is going, but we can examine, I think, the politics of what is perhaps its flagship publication, the flagship publication of the DSA left, which is Jacobin Magazine. And again, Jacobin Magazine has all kinds of very left-wing contributors. It is also distances itself from the Cold War anti-communism of social democracy. It says that social democracy, that the welfare state isn't enough. It takes its distance from Harrington's view about realigning the Democratic Party. But recently, we have had what appears to be a couple of manifestos from two of its leading personalities. One is Bhaskar Sobkhara, who wrote an article last summer in an op-ed piece in the New York Times, and Vivek Chibber, who is an academic who also edits the Catalyst magazine. And that they reaffirm their commitment to two very important things here. One is electoral reformism, but working within the electoral system. And two is the market socialism. There is very little argumentation for this. I say it reflects a mood and a sensibility rather than a well-thought-out position, but it also represents, and I'll finish right here, it represents a refurbished, rebranded social democracy shorn of some of its more repellent characteristics. That is the closest thing we can come to ascertaining what the politics of the left wing of the DSA is.
Activist and political observer Jim Cregan. And you've been listening to Notes from the Left Forum from a 2018 panel examining what is the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, whose membership has swelled with the Bernie Sanders campaign and the failure of Hillary Clinton and the Democrats to defeat Donald Trump. In this program, you heard Jack Devine, Aaron Higgard, and Jim Cregan. This program was produced by Alex Steinberg and Linda Perry from Pacifica Radio and WBAI New York, with thanks to the Left Forum, and thank you for listening.